Carpenter said in a speech a few weeks ago that the era of six-part series is over. Well, that's a pretty frightening thought. It's over? Who's going to do the in-depth covering of what happens to us in our society on many levels? And then in this last week, we saw 61 more reporters and editors bite the dust at The Sun, given their notice. One story we heard, and we'll talk and we'll introduce these guests to you in a minute, was that there were several people covering an Orioles game. I think it was the middle of the fifth inning. The phone rings in the press office. They were told by The Sun, go home. You no longer have a job. The leading editors of the paper were let go. The copy editors. When there's no copy editors, that means there are no stories. So what happens to The Sun? What happens to the free press? What happens to our future? And where is press going? We're going to talk about that with our three guests this hour and you at 410-319-8888. Eileen Kantian, I did say it right, did I not?
Yes.
Good. Eileen Kantian was an editor and a reporter at The Sun for nearly 30 years. Her last assignment was as assistant metro editor, handling environmental and medical coverage. She was laid off last week, a polite way of saying shown the door. David Steele is with us, who is great to see him again.
Great to see you, too.
Not in these circumstances, but it's good to see you.
Yeah, right.
David Steele is a Baltimore Sun sports columnist that many of us read. He was also let go this week, along with 61 others. David Edlund's in the studio. He's been on my studio in my program before as well. He spent 40 years as a writer and editor of the Baltimore Sun. He took the buyout and retired as night metropolitan editor in June of 2007. He writes the blog, which you can check out right now, which is really interesting, called The Real Muck, M-U-C-K, which can be found at etlin.blogspot.com. And folks, welcome, good to have all three of you with us.
Thanks.
Thank you.
So let me turn first to the two among the 61 who were shown the door by The Sun. Did you see it coming? Did you expect it?
I didn't. I mean, I guess, you know, I was part of the group that went out on that got it on Wednesday, so I already knew what had happened on Tuesday, and I think there was a lot of speculation already that something was going to happen, you know, sometime very soon, you know, end of the week, something like that, and I certainly didn't think, you know, the very next day, you know, less than 24 hours later. So, yeah, I knew something was going to happen. You know, this was just the state of the paper, the state of the Tribune, you know, at this point. But otherwise, no, this really blindsided me.
Eileen?
I didn't. Apparently, I should have. but I've been there a long time. I've done many different things. I think I'm well-regarded by most people in the newsroom. And I think I imagined that the Baltimore Sun would feel that it needed my skills in one way or another.
What does it say to the three of you? And I'm going to ask a number of serious questions about this, but and go backwards. And I've done a lot of emailing back and forth with people like David Simon, who I respect a great deal as a writer. And he's very pointed about what he thinks happened there. And he's actually testifying before Congress this week, I believe, to that effect. And we'll talk a bit about his theories in a minute and see what you think. But when The Sun lets go, when a newspaper, any newspaper, lets go its editors, its copy editors, those who kind of oversee what goes on with reporters, what does that say to you about the state of news and what happens to the news?
I think part of the problem is that
David Edlund.
Inevitably they were going to be cutting back on staff. And it was the way that they did it, all in one swell foop, that everybody out the door in such – without any notice – there was a kind of a rudeness to it, to people who had given much dedication to their jobs. They devoted their lives to the Baltimore Sun and making it a great newspaper as much as they could when circumstances would allow. And they were shown the door. There was extra security brought into the building, and they were basically put out. And there were other ways to do it. There were also other steps the newspaper could have done to try and forestall that, to slow it down, to make things happen in a gradual way that respected the people who worked for them. And they chose not to do that. And I think that's maybe why we feel so badly about it. But what does it say when you don't have copy editors? Well, it says that you're going to have less quality control in what's left in the newspaper, and there's going to be mistakes.
A lot of mistakes.
Well, I'm afraid so.
I mean, there was a story, and I'll turn to you for the response as well, Eileen and David. I mean, there was in this morning's Sun, there was a story about an arson took place where people died in the fire. It was one paragraph. They found the people who did it. But that was it. It was one paragraph. And you're saying, one paragraph? You know, this is an important, and a tragic thing that happened in our community, it deserves some space to talk about what happened here. Who were the people? What went on? It wasn't there. So what happens when a paper loses that kind of historical memory and its editors?
Well, I think it's two different things. You could put, if you're constrained by economics, you can, and perhaps the Sun did, put a longer story online about that arson. If you have good, there are still really good reporters there, and they know more about that arson.
There's no question.
If there wasn't room for that in the print edition, then maybe it went online, and so maybe something is still happening. In terms of beat editors, and, you know, I'm biased. I was a beat editor. You know, I worked with the environment reporters. I worked with the medical reporters. I've worked with various beats over the years. And it's the more in-depth stories that I think will take a different path. I mean, I think the reporters themselves would say if you're covering the environment, you're really looking at trying to look at what's happening with the bay, and they're looking at it very closely. These longer stories just don't rise up out of nowhere. The ideas come from good reporters, but they're working with an editor. It's not just a matter of placing commas or moving prose around. You are really working together. You are perhaps seeing the forest and not just the trees, and you're helping people see what they might want to go after, how to go after it in terms of researching a story, and it makes a difference. And often that's how award-winning journalism happens. And I think even the reporters feel that they're feeling a little bit out there on their own. They'll have to see how the new structure works.
David?
As a writer, and who's spent a little bit of time on the copy desk, I mean, you know, relatively speaking, to the rest of my career, six months here and maybe 3 or 4 months there. I mean, I'd almost rather see, you know, a paper with copy editors and no reporters than the other way around. I mean, it's, you know, and to be honest, I'll admit it took me, you know, doing it myself to really grasp it, although I always had I like to think I have a pretty good appreciation for what the desk does. But as devastating as it might be for me personally and the things that Howard went through for all the reporters who lost their job on Wednesday, to hear what happened just in sports, if you just take them specifically, where in my department, what happened on the copy desk to, you know, some of our chief editors, like Ray Frazier and George Van Daneker, and just a long, long list of people over the last couple of years who have left through buyouts and just leaving in other ways. It really hurts the paper in so many ways. I mean, I've tried to tell them as often as possible. This is one of the best desks I've ever worked for in my entire career, and they're so helpful. They make the paper better. They make your stories better. They help you create better stories, and they. The amount of institutional knowledge that went out the door as well, you know, that's devastating, especially here. I mean, this is a, you know, special kind of city, special kind of audience, and you know, there's so much knowledge that's just gone now that just you can't replace it. You know, money can't buy that, and it's devastating to the entire paper. You know, I mean, it's. You really almost, here we are, a bunch of journalists. I can't put it into words how bad it is. You just don't know it till you see it and just say, this is not the same paper.
It isn't. I mean, I wonder what, I mean, you spoke a moment ago, David Itlin, about there could have been another way to do this. What were you talking about?
I think that they were eventually going to be shrinking the staff or moving it around into other kinds of jobs, focusing more on online, less on print. But they could have done this in a gradual fashion. There were steps they didn't take. They've emasculated the Monday and Tuesday newspapers, for example. They've cut them both to two very skimpy sections. What if somebody said, why don't we just eliminate both of these days as a print edition? Or in football season, we put out a sports extra and we sell it on the stands and we beef these things up. What if the other 5 days of the week we did some really terrific journalism focusing on an area that's important to our readers and give them what they need? Instead of basically cutting their readers off, telling them you can't have this, you can't have that. Did they ever ask the staff what their ideas were on what we could do to save this newspaper, to make it better, to sell subscriptions? And as far as I know, they didn't bring in anybody. The people out of Chicago consulted with their top editors and said, this is what we want to do. This is how we want to bring everything together, and we're going to run this out of Chicago. And I read one blog that said 75% of the content of the Baltimore Sun eventually is going to be coming from modular pieces that come out of Chicago so that there's room to fit ads around it, and it's not coming out of Baltimore. And I think that's tragic.
Well, it's no longer a local paper then.
Well, they're still going to have local news, and that's what's going to fit in the holes around those modules. And, of course, the front page, because if you read the front page Sunday, it was all local news. Well, what happened to the national and the international news that people are interested in? There's very little of it. It's amazing how little there is.
And it's, you know, we've had to sit and watch that decrease, you know, closing the foreign bureaus and all the things, closing the Washington Bureau. Just it's been devastating knowing what this paper has done over the decades. I mean, long before I even got there. You know, just the legacy that this paper has, and to look at that compared to what it is now. You know, what are we giving them? What are we providing, you know, the readers? And, you know, we're you know, as professionals and journalists and people who are really committed to this town and to this area, you know, we're invested in this. You know, I would love for somebody to have come and asked us, either individually or collectively, you know, what can we do differently? Think about this. I mean, I know that's happening at other papers.
What would you have sort of? What would you have said? I'm not sure you and Eileen might have begun to say.
That was actually pretty good.
I love David's idea.
That was interesting.
And I'm gonna have that transcribed and use that. I'll give you credit.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
I think it's a great idea.
You know, every once in a while, over the last couple of years, and again, I'm just taking, you know, sports as an example, they would come up with ideas to do things online that would enhance what was, you know, in the paper. You know, I have my specific days and I'm writing my column, but I would write a column that only ran on the, you know, on the website every once in a while because something was going on that made it worthwhile, and others would do the same thing. You know, enhanced stories, you know, longer pieces, pieces with more video, pieces with more interactive elements, things like that that would, you know, sort of work both ways, drive traffic. You know, I guess that's kind of a big word now.
drive traffic.
But at least make people get interested in what's, you know, in the whole story, a way to tell the story the way we used to, in a way, which means in a complete way, but just, you know, within the limitations of what newspapers are now. You know, just say, okay, we don't have as much space to do things in the paper, so let's really do it even bigger online. And they would try it, they would do it, people would like it, we would like it, we'd say, hey, we don't mind doing this kind of thing, and then they would just stop and do something else.
Eileen?
Well, to be fair, we have not seen how this new reorganization will play out. I mean, I think it took effect today. And so how the paper will look and how the website will look, I mean, I think we're about to see a new adventure at the Sun. And I really do have sympathy. I mean, we all know what's happening at papers. You know, nobody buys classified ads anymore. It was a great deal of what funded newspapers. So they're trying to figure out a new way to do it. And I don't envy them that, you know. So I don't know what the answer is. I don't claim it would be easy, and I don't know what the answer is. I think what's really sad is that there was a role we played. If a person like me was in this to be part of democracy, you know, it sounds like Pollyanna or something like that. But you know, you were out there to either as a reporter cover an issue or as an editor help people focus attention on things the General Assembly is doing, or how bad is the health of Maryland's rivers, or things like that, and get it out there so people could talk about it. And if you have, if you don't have as many beat reporters in this industry, not just at the Sun, then what's going to happen? I mean, look at Anne Arundel County. Until a couple years ago, the Post had a bureau there. The Sun had a number of reporters there, and even until last week, even before last week, the Sun was down to three reporters there, and the Post had closed its bureau. Now, the Annapolis Capital still covers Annapolis, but you know, there used to be a bevy of people watching, and I'm just picking that county as an example. It's true in all the counties. True in the city of Baltimore. It used to be a bevy of reporters looking over the shoulders, and you know, we're not perfect, and we get things wrong, but we were looking, and that's how I believe it ought to be. And there isn't the money to pay for it anymore.
Well, I want to talk about the money part. I'm going to take a break, but I'm going to get our callers into this. We're talking about what happened at the Sun, the layoffs that took place, people being let go. 61 last week were let go from the Sun. The Sun is a shadow of its former self. You just heard Eileen Kanzian, who is an editor and reporter at the Sun for nearly 30 years. Her last assignment was as assistant metro editor, handling environmental and medical coverage. David Steele, you heard before that. He's former Baltimore Sun sports columnist. He was laid off last week as well. David Etlin spent 40 years as a writer and editor of the Baltimore Sun, took the buyout and retired as night metropolitan editor in June of 2007, writes the blog The Real Muck, which can be found at Etlin, E-T-T-L-I-N, etlin.blogspot.com, 410-319-8888. What happens with democracy when there's not journalists to cover what goes on here? When there's not interesting stories to grab us to the paper, as in sports, as in features? These are a piece of who we are. Are newspapers really dead? Do you think it's over? And what happens next? 410-319-8888. Let's get a couple of callers in here as we try to answer these questions. And Greg, you've been waiting a while. You're on the air.
I want to just bring up another issue, which is like Noam Chomsky, the MIT professor and political philosopher, talks about the corporate control of newspapers. And when the Tribune Company purchased the Sun, I thought, you know, now the Sun's going downhill. And I think that we're seeing that because the Tribune Company has so much debt it can't pay off, that it's destroying a number of its papers, including the Sun. And but the other part of the equation in the so-called death of newspapers story, I think, is also like the failure of newspapers in recent years to really cover the issues. And before I ask my real question, I just want to say, like, for instance, with the New York Times, which I used to think was a wonderful paper, they basically falsely covered the Iraq weapons of mass destruction issue. And they blame it on their one reporter, Judith Miller, but the fact is the country went to war based on a lot of weapons of mass destruction reporting that was totally false in the New York Times. So when these tough economic times come up, why should people be loyal to, you know, these papers when, you know, when I think the younger people don't believe that the news and the so-called the democracy, which journalism is supposed to be the fourth estate of, the fourth branch of our government, really, is not doing its work. But the question I have is, where do you guys see journalism going where it can fulfill its democratic role while also being commercially viable?
That's a very large question.
Well, that was a very, very large question. I want to start with the first thing you said about, you know, big business buying up chains of newspapers. That truly has not been a good model, the way things have played out since the Internet has made such an impact on their earnings. As far as failing to cover things that are important to the community, I think that's wrong. I think newspapers have done everything they can under the circumstances, often adverse circumstances. And who's going to replace them? I'm not sure, because I'm not sure that people who are doing blogs are in a position to do serious investigative journalism without fearing things like libel suits against them. You can, you know, there are a lot of people who are like doing wrong out there, and you write about them, and the first thing they do is start threatening legal action. And an individual just can't rise up against that as well as a newspaper, as far as working from a standpoint of some kind of power.
That's an important point. I think also that what Greg was talking about in terms of the corporatization of papers. I mean, there was an article about a month ago or so in the New York Times, front-page article about the demise of newspapers. And there was one line in the third or fourth paragraph in that I said, this is a line that needs to be developed, because he didn't say much beyond this one line. And the line was something about the reason so many papers are in financial jeopardy is the corporatization of papers and the inability of those corporations to service the debt on the profits they receive from running their newspapers.
That's certainly the case at Tribune.
And that says a great deal, because someone else said to me today, if there was a more of a nonprofit model and there was no debt service and you didn't have to pay your shareholders money, then the Sun could continue to survive and maybe be a much larger paper than it is at this moment. What are your thoughts about all that? Now, taking what Greg was saying. Greg, I'm going to hit your other part, too, about you don't think the papers have covered the things like the Iraq War hard enough. I think it's a legitimate conversation to have.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, we've all witnessed what it's been like with, you know, Tribune. And the fact that they are so, that these companies that do own these media, you know, not just newspapers, but these media companies, you know, that they're so beholden to the shareholders and to the stock price. I mean, and they'll let that drive every decision that they make. You know, that's why they make the decisions to, like, you know, cut resources, cut staff, you know, reduce a lot of the things that are, you know, that have been happening. And, you know, you can't have a newspaper without, you know, people to do the reporting. And, you know, I can't say I haven't been around long enough to understand exactly how it all worked before when it was all family owned. When there were a lot of family. I've worked for places that have been family owned and then became corporate owned. And it seemed as if, you know, they certainly cared about making money. And there have been layoffs before in other economic times where they've had to make changes and reduce staffs and reduce news hole and things like that. But never to this point, because there at least did seem to be a commitment to the product. It's like, this product is important, you know, not this product in comparison to how the TV or the radio station or the magazine or the whatever else is going on or whatever else is affecting the corporation's bottom line. But the product itself as a newspaper is important. And so we were still able to continue doing what we were doing. But just the fact that things were going downhill so fast tells you that obviously there's been a big change in what their emphasis was, what their priorities were.
Eileen Kenton?
But you, the Tribune Company is an special example because I think Sam Zell spent especially a lot of money to buy these papers, to buy the Tribune Company. And so his debt, as I understand it, is very high, and I'm not an expert about that. But other papers are having the same trouble. I mean, the fact is that the United States of America or the people or the newspaper industry have to find a way to do this. I mean, the New York Times is in trouble.
Yeah, but
the New
also,
York Times is in trouble. The Boston Globe may close.
But they also had their debt burden. They had to buy the Globe. They bought the Globe. They can't afford to maintain it. And the other things they bought, the real estate they purchased, adds to the debt that they carry. I mean, that was part of the issue.
I'm sure it's complicating the problem. But at the same time, as I understand it, the fact is a huge amount of the way newspapers were paid for was through classified advertising. Nobody pays for classified advertising anymore. They can do it for free on the internet. That's millions and millions of dollars of revenue that isn't there. There isn't Hex buying ads to compete with Macy's. There's no mattress discounters. I mean, the ads, the whole model that paid for it isn't there. So I think, aside from these debt questions, I think the small papers, the small family-owned papers, are having trouble too. The way they were paid for before doesn't work anymore. And I think these are all good questions about, do we need to look at nonprofits? Do we need to look at different models? I don't have the answer, but you know, there's one.
I'm sorry.
I haven't written the blog yet, but I'll tell you what I was thinking about writing, and I haven't had a chance with all the crush of events to put it on, was simply to go out there and say, if the Able Foundation wanted to buy the Baltimore Sun in some way, I'll pledge $1,000 right now, and I'll offer to work for 6 months for free to help them edit and get it going, because I believe that the Baltimore Sun is important. And, you know, it's heartbreaking. Will it work? I don't know, but there certainly is another model needed.
And, David?
The other thing that I think we may have brought it up in one way or the other, I mean, we've been giving the content away on the internet. I mean, that's huge. You know, I mean, I guess when papers first started doing that, just putting everything on the air and not charging anything for it, I thought, well, it's, you know, that'll help, you know, drive people toward, you know, buying the paper, buying subscriptions, things like that. And, you know, I don't know anything about that. It's not my expertise, but there are people out there who are supposed to understand these things. And if you're just giving it away, then, you know, no one's ever going to buy it. And even worse, people are going to, you know, sort of pick at your content and, you know, drive their own sites. I mean, you know, there are so many sites out there that are, you know, prosperous because of the work that we do that we just give away. And there's no way to turn that around now. I mean, that genie seems to be out of the bottle. I don't know if, like, things can turn around by saying, hey, we're going to start charging for you to buy the Sun online now with all this great content that's out there. I mean, I don't know how that was supposed to be fixed, but I mean, there seems to be no question anymore. That was a huge mistake, whoever made that decision, and whoever in this industry continued to follow it.
Is there a solution? I mean, I think, is there a way, you see where our future's going in journalism and news to get through this? And let me open the phones here again, and then we'll kind of tackle that subject in a whole lot more. We're joined by Eileen Kanzi and David Steele and David Etlin, all of whom are former Sun writers and editors. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. And George, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hi, George, you're on the air.
Yes. I had two questions. One is, I feel that the coverage for the inner city high schools for years had been a little bit of shortchanged when compared to the county schools, which I also think kind of contribute to the downfall of some of the Sun paper, especially. What do you think on that? I feel about that.
You had 2 points?
Yes. Yeah, the other one was, when Morgan had won the MEAC conference and made it to the NCAA tournament for the first time, I had called 105.7 radio station, spoke to their DJ, and asked them if they could give at least an hour show once a week on the MEAC conference, since there's 3 universities in the state of Maryland that's in that one conference. And the DJ said that he would lose his audience or lose some of the viewers if he was to kind of do that. But it, I thought that was like a seven-day radio station. And for him to make a statement like that, I really felt that it was biased. And another thing that just goes to show how the media has been really a little, just shortchanging Baltimore City, the positive parts.
I think you raised some really good points, and we're going to take a short break. Soon to come back, George, we're going to tackle the 2 points you raised for our panel. We're talking about the future of the Sun Papers. Three people with us, two of whom were laid off this week, one of whom took the buyout a couple of years back. Your thoughts on the future of journalism, the future of papers, how important are they to you? Where do you get your news? Do you read them in the newspaper? Do you go online? How do you find your news and why? 410-319-8888 is the number here. And the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland State Mortgage Late Don't Wait program. For more information and personal counseling, the number is 1-877-462-7555. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner. I remind you that the Maryland Film Festival runs from May 7th through 10th. It's the region's premier film event with over 130 films from all over the world with filmmakers and other surprises. For details and to purchase tickets to guarantee you can get in to the movies you want, go to mdfilmfest.com. It starts Thursday night, folks. We're talking about the Sun Papers and talking about the future of journalism in the United States, in our community here, especially in Baltimore. What's going to happen to the city? Let's say the Sun went dark. Then what? We're talking with two people who were just laid off from the Sun, among the 61 who lost their jobs last week. Eileen Kanzian was an editor and reporter for the Sun for 30 years. Last assignment was as assistant metro editor, handling environmental and medical coverage. David Steele is a former Baltimore Sun sports columnist. David Etlin spent 40 years as a writer and editor of the Baltimore Sun, took a buyout, and retired as night metropolitan editor in June 2007. Writes the blog The Real Muck, which you can find at ETTLIN, that's etlin.blogspot.com. 410-319-8888, steinershow@gmail.com. So George called in. Start with the inner city high school stuff. That's your bailiwick. You're a sports man. What do you think?
Yeah, it's hard to compare the way things are now because we're stripped down so bare back there in terms of, and that's probably where it's been hit the worst. I mean, hey, we've got columns, we got people who can write about the Ravens and the Orioles, anytime. But I think things like high school coverage have probably suffered the most as the restrictions have gone down. But I do know that up until the last couple of years, some of the best stuff we did was covering high schools, including the inner city stuff. And that's something that, there were times where we had to fight for it, those of us on the staff, because we felt exactly how the caller did, because we said, this is something that the city can really connect to, and we can connect to parts of the city that don't feel connected to the paper necessarily. And a lot of the people who did do that just are gone now, and now the space is gone and the resources are gone as well. That sort of thing. It is an uphill battle, and that's probably something that goes on at every paper, because I've been in a lot of different places, big markets, small markets. It's a really, really hard balance to find, so that the people in the city feel like they're being respected as opposed to people in the suburbs, because there is sometimes, not just a tilt toward, pay attention to what's going on in the suburbs, because that is where the money is, and people in the city who might feel alienated by stuff and don't want to feel that way about their newspaper. They want to think, they want to have a reason to pick up the paper and read about themselves and what's going on there. And so it is a tough balance, and it makes it even harder when things are like this, because something's going to go, and if they feel like they haven't been paid attention to in the first place, then they're going to feel that way as well.
I mean, there's a lot of over the years, there's always been a lot of complaints and criticisms of the Sun and its coverage of African-American issues, of city issues, that affect poor communities, that cover high schools, as we were just talking about. I mean, that's been not a new critique of the Sun.
Eileen?
Well, it's hard for me to see that, you know, because when I came here as a young reporter and was writing about poor neighborhoods and walking all around, I began to understand the history. You know, when I wrote about the people who were dislocated for that one-mile stretch of highway, the highway to nowhere, and I went back and found the homeowners who were displaced, and I look at the clips that were written about when those houses were knocked down, and the Sun in the 50s was writing, you know, the highway will go through West Baltimore, the neighborhoods are slums, period, paragraph, and nothing was said about who would be moved. And when I went back and found the people, and that it was middle class Baltimore, it was teachers and all kinds of very stable people wonderful people who at that time were not allowed to live anywhere else because of segregation. So certainly there was a time when the Sun absolutely ignored black Baltimore. I had felt like we were doing better in some regards in terms of having reporters out there and trying to do it, but clearly we're not doing enough, and there's so many things we're not covering anymore. There were until a decade ago there were 400 journalists, and now there's about 140. I mean, part of it's a simple lack of people.
What happens to a community like ours when newspapers go dull, if not dark?
Problems are not going to be exposed. People who are doing a bad job running your city or running your state are going to have a better time of it because they're not going to have people looking over their shoulders and looking for what you're doing wrong, where is the corruption, who's getting the money. It's in their interest to not share that with the public, and it's what newspapers do at their best is to root out wrongdoing.
How do you three, as journalists, respond to the public, not just to the newspaper that is destroying journalism, I think, in many ways, to talk about the importance of what you do? You know what I mean? I mean, if we are looking at where we are now, and you think about all the things that newspapers covered, all the things that journalists covered and uncovered for us, and you hear the new editor of The Sun saying the era of six-part stories is over, whether on the web or whether they're in print. I mean, talk to the rest of the community about your lives as journalists and what this is saying to you, what it's saying to all of us.
Well, here's what we lose. I mean, we saw an example in Baltimore City government a few months ago when the Sun City Hall reporter, after checking the fine print, realized that very quietly, without discussion, that they'd voted to give themselves raises. And articles were printed about that, and the public had a fair amount of outrage about that. I think it was good for the public to know that happened. There was a reporter who noticed that. 20 years ago, there would have been five or six, at least, reporters at that city council meeting, because there was the Morning Sun and the Evening Sun and the News American, and the radio stations had reporters there. The TV stations would have a reporter there.
And the Afro-American had more depth then.
Absolutely. So who's watching? How many people are left to be watching?
Yeah, you were about to say something.
Yeah. The people's stories just don't get told. You know, that was a great example.
I mean,
was about City Hall, and but also about the highway, and about, you know, if that was taking place now, and you started hearing stories about people being displaced, I mean, everybody would know about it. Everyone would be talking about it. There's no way that the people who could make a difference in that could ignore it, because there would be a public, you know, upheaval. It'd be an outrage, and this goes on, you know, in every area that we cover, and it could come from every section. It could come from, you know, a feature story, and you know, we. If nobody's there to tell those stories and there's no venue to tell those stories in, then they just get ignored. They get overlooked. Problems get overlooked. Great stories get overlooked. And, you know, people and this city just begins to shrink, and they just, you know, the connections are broken, and, you know, that it's almost not even a city then, you know, because everyone just loses contact with what's going on. I mean, somebody up in Carroll County might find out about something that's going on out in West Baltimore, mm-hmm. and that may spur them to action, you know. And the thing is, the avenues of communication are so much greater now. You know, there's so many more ways for everybody to connect. And yet, here we are. We're shriveling up, and we're, you know, we're disappearing. Somebody can respond a lot quicker now, you know, to something that they read about that's going on, and yet we're taking that away because we're just cutting back.
At its best, the newspaper, I think, really lived up to a slogan they used for the 150th anniversary of the paper some 21 years ago, and that was the story of our lives for 150 years. And I don't see that they're able to tell the story of our lives anymore, and I think that's tragic.
Because even if the argument goes people do not read newspapers anymore, newspapers are the place of record. Yeah. Other media, internet, TV, radio, pay attention to what's there. I mean, I founded the news department at another radio station before I came here. And when you look at the news, part of what you did there, you read the paper. And what is the paper covering? We also try to find news that the paper didn't cover and try to get some our own stories, obviously. And that was a big piece of what we did. But the paper was the place that exposed things that other electronic media then grabs a hold of and does more with. And it's just, I mean, there's a synergy there that's gone. Yeah. There's no body of journalists writing and unearthing stuff.
And you know what? As opposed to what people seem to be saying, you keep hearing these pockets of people saying that, oh, newspaper is dead, print is dead.
Yeah.
You know, it's not there. Or here in this town, I don't get that. People talk about how they wouldn't miss it. It could be easily replaced, stuff like that. Not in this town. I don't get any sense at all. I mean, people, you talk about, you know, what you hear from people who actually come up to you and talk to you and interact with you personally. They miss what it used to be, and they're angry about what it is now. And they come to you, want answers, and they say, why is it like this? What's going to happen? Why can't it be like it used to be? And they tell stories.
I don't get a sense that they understand that in Chicago.
They don't. Hey, yeah.
Or they care. I don't think they care about it in Chicago. In Chicago is the bottom line. I mean, when Zell says to the newsroom who owns the Tribune and all its companies, this is a newsroom on Capitol Hill in Washington, that everybody in this room is expendable, that, you know, that you're collateral. I mean, he's talking to the reporters. He's talking to people who are covering the White House and the U.S. Capitol. I mean, that says a lot about the mindset of who is running the store, you know. And when somebody said to me today about reading newspapers, and I didn't even know the answer. It's a very interesting thing that he posited was, well, is it true that fewer people are reading newspapers, or is it true that younger people, period, don't read newspapers until they get older? In other words, the same thing with the National Public Radio News. It skews older. But people, as they get older, listen to more news. Maybe as you get older, you read more papers.
And
I don't know the answer to that. It was just an interesting...
Older reader is the very audience that the Sun has attempted to get rid of first. They eliminated stock tables. They made type hard to read. They did any number of things. They eliminated what people enjoyed as best they could.